Welcome to 3GT, a podcast where a pastor, parishioner, and professor have lively conversations on practical Christian living from a Reformed perspective. For more information, visit our website at 3GT.fm. Well, welcome back to another episode of 3GT. That's Three Guys Theologizing. I'm Aaron Sams, and I'm here with my co-hosts Kyle Borg and Barry York. If you listened to our show last week, we talked a lot about the eternal submission of the Son and some translations in the ESV, as well as some ESV study notes that have caused some discussion on the Trinity, which have caused some discussion on roles between men and women at home, roles between men and women in the church. And so we were chatting about this offline and reflecting on this a little bit. And I mentioned to the guys that that I am by no means an expert in this field, but my wife has read and studied considerably about eternal submission and a lot of the conversation going on between complementarians and egalitarians. She recently read Amy Bird's book on the topic, follows a lot of blogs that discuss it, and it generates a lot of great conversation around our house. And so a couple of things about that. One, my wife is way smarter than me. Number two is she's far more well-read than me. And number three, though, I realize that there are far more women engaging in theological conversation and who have both formal and informal theological training that I think a lot of people are aware of. And so that's what we wanted to discuss today, is just kind of an increase trend of women receiving theological education both formally and informally and becoming very informed members of the church, and what impact that's having on the church. So, guys, what are some general observations that you're seeing in this realm to get our conversation kicked off?
I thought when you said this was going to be about reforming women that we were going to talk about how we could change our wives. That's not what this episode's about.
Oh, no. Yeah, that title certainly could be misinterpreted, but hopefully we head down the right path here.
No, it is quite a phenomenon. I mean, there's all this, all these different blogs, A Daughter of the Reformation, Sheologians, hermeneutics, with an emphasis on the her, and so there's a lot of women that are out there studying theology, so it is quite a phenomenon, I think a good phenomenon, generally speaking, and so this should be an interesting conversation. I didn't mean to cut you off, Kyle. What were you going to say?
Oh, it's not going to be funny anymore. I was just going to tell Aaron, my observation would be, we got the wrong Sams. We should be actually having his wife on this with us.
Oh, I have no doubt that she could contribute much more than I could to the conversation, but she would also not ever be caught dead with her voice on a podcast. And if she ever listens to this, she'd probably shoot me for even mentioning such a thing. So,
friends don't let friends record each other. That's what I was once told.
It would mess up our name a little bit, you know, three guys.
It would.
Two guys and a gal, I guess.
Three guys, two guys and a gal, two guys and a girl. Yeah. I don't know. Well, I think, you know, Barry's already noted that there does seem to be an increase in the involvement and the interaction of women in theology. I'm only 34 years old, so I'm probably not old enough to speak to whether that's abnormal or whether things are changing. But I do, on the whole, I find it to be a very, very encouraging thing. I remember a number of years ago, I guess it's 13 years ago now, I was listening to John Piper preach, and one of the points that he made that has always stuck with me is that what the church in our day and age is in desperate need of are women that have a theological backbone of steel, and that perhaps the church in ages past, and you know, in the last century or so, has not done the best of jobs at encouraging women to really be thinkers and to really have theological convictions. And I think it's only a positive move if that's where the church is coming from and where it's going, is encouraging women to be more involved in these things. I think that's a tremendous thing for our generation, and my prayer continues to be to have women who have men and women who have theological backbones of steel.
So guys, what do you have any specific examples either from your churches where you see this happening, or, you know, formal or informal training where you see more and more women participating than you have in the past? Barry, what are you seeing at the seminary in terms of enrollment of women at the seminary? What's your finger on the pulse telling you?
Well, I know it's a stereotype to think that, you know, it's the men who after church sit around and talk theology and the women are off discussing, you know, children, although there's some truth to the fact that they like to talk about their families. But what I have found in my ministry in the church is that many of the women are very interested in studies of the scripture, they're reading, they're talking about theology. And so I see it, as Kyle said, as a very, very healthy trend. We are to disciple not just men, but all peoples, both men, women, and children, all men, women, and children in the congregation. So I think it's great when women dig in. I know in my former presbytery, we would have what we called seminary level classes, where we would bring in a professor to teach. It was, you know, primarily started to really aim toward training men for the ministry, but often those classes would have, if not as many, close to it, young women, older women even studying there. We've seen the same type of trend developing at the seminary, where we have women coming and taking classes, and even many times where the husbands are there studying to become a pastor, when it's possible, the wives are taking classes or auditing classes. Some of the men and women who are married are both getting a degree at the seminary. So I do think it's a growing trend. I don't have statistics. I probably should have, but I don't have statistics on, you know, women studying. Particularly, we're talking about Reformed and evangelical seminaries. I'm just not quite sure what the statistics are on that, but I have to believe it's increasing.
So Barry, at RPTS, there's no restriction of, you know, enrolling in classes for men only or anything like that. Even though the seminary is primarily there to train up pastors, are there avenues of seminary education that are you know, more appropriate or less appropriate for women to pursue based on our convictions about office holding in the church?
Yeah, that statement's almost true. I mean, we do make some distinctions academically. So we offer 3 degrees at RPTS, Master's of Theological Studies, a 2-year academic degree, the MDiv, which is for training pastors, and then the Doctor of Ministry. And that middle one, the Master of Divinity, is only for men because it's for the pastoral office. And though I would say that all of the classes except a few that MDiv students take are open to women. One of the classes that wouldn't be, for instance, would be a class on preaching, because we're not training women to preach. But other classes regarding discipleship or spiritual godliness, those types of classes would all be available to the women that are studying there, as would be the Doctor of Ministry program. We've had, because we offer a counseling concentration, a lot of women like to come to RPTS to study counseling.
Well, if we could back up just one moment, Aaron, you had asked maybe for some specific examples of women who are doing this in a more public way. I think we could probably think through some pastoral examples. I know my church is not huge into studying theology, but one of the people that probably does so the most is a woman in my church. And she and I often exchange books and, hey, I'm reading this. What are you reading lately? Oh, let's swap. And I've so appreciated that relationship with her, to be challenged and encouraged and mutually edified. So we could probably think of people on a personal scale that we see that with. But on a more public scale, you know, Amy Bird, who is a member of an OPC church out east, she would be an example of a woman who is doing much in a very public way in thinking through theology. In fact, that debate that we were talking about in the last episode, the eternal subordination of the son, she was at front and center in many ways for that. Mm-hmm. It was her and her cohorts, Carl Truman and Todd Pruitt and Liam Gallagher, who really began sounding off. And Amy, in my opinion, she's not a lightweight. She's a very, very thorough thinker. And I've learned a lot from her. She's recently written a book, No Little Women, Equipping All Women in the Household of God. And I have not read the whole thing, but it's really focusing on this topic, is how can we continue to disciple and raise up women who are no little women, but they're women of the faith. So she would be one example. Rosaria Butterfield is another wonderful example. Rosaria Butterfield, who's done a lot in speaking into the sexual crisis of our generation. Rosaria is, boy, I feel very humbled every time I talk to her or hear from her or read her, because she's brilliant. And she, in many ways, I think she is one of the leading figures on speaking into the sexual crisis that the evangelical church has. It's not a man. It's Rosaria Butterfield. And so we can be very thankful for her witness. There's a woman with a backbone of steel. So those are some of the women in a public way that I begin to think of.
Yeah, she's really the rock star of the Reformed Presbyterian Church, because sometimes when I introduce myself, people don't know who I am. But then if I say Reformed Presbyterian, she says, oh, is that the denomination of Rosaria Butterfield? So she's quite well known. If I might mention just one other one, Aaron, I'm actually reading along with my wife a book called Reformation Women. Our friend Rebecca Van Dudewaard has just recently published this. And it's just a dozen figures taken from an earlier book on the women of the Reformation. And it's really amazing to read how God used these women. I was just reading a story about Karen Willoughby, an English woman who lived during the time of King Henry VIII, actually was quite related in relationships with King Henry and his court, and a leading Protestant figure who took on the Catholics in many ways by speaking against their abuses. She even named her dog after one of the cardinals. And anyway, she just was a lady who the Lord used mightily to help hundreds and thousands of refugees during the time of the Reformation, Protestant refugees, and lived a very godly life. So anyway, there are all these figures in history that we can learn from, and it reminds us this isn't just a recent phenomenon. There's always been women contributing mightily to the health and vitality of Christ's church.
So Barry, you mentioned that and I think it sounds like, you know, Kyle and I would be agreed that we want people in our churches, men and women alike, to have theological backbones of steel. And that can come from formal and informal theological training. But my hunch is that there are people out there who don't think that this is an appropriate thing. Do you know of arguments against? Do you hear chatter of why people who would think that this would be a bad change for the church to have women formally and informally trained in theology? Or do you think this is a universally accepted trend for the benefit?
Oh, no, I don't think everyone accepts this. And it does bring some unique challenges. Rebecca talks about these ladies. They were tough and ladylike. And you do have to maintain that balance. Women have to maintain that balance, just as men have to maintain their own balances as well. I know she was relating to me a story of she was speaking at a conference and was basically confronted in a parking lot that, you're that woman preacher. And Rebecca, who would be aghast at that thought because she doesn't view herself that way at all, said, I am not preaching. I am simply under the authority and the support of my husband speaking at this conference, teaching on a particular subject, but I am not a preacher and I'm not preaching. And that's really raises one of the challenges. where is that line drawn? Paul talks about, you know, women aren't to be teaching men and Timothy. And so how do you work this out in such a way where women who are gifted and who write blogs that we benefit from and write books like Rosaria has done or Amy Bird has done that we benefit from, how do you draw those lines and those distinctions so that we're not going against the proper rules that the Lord has given to us in Scripture? So I think that's one of the questions that often arises in these kinds of conversations. I don't know, I have answers, but those are the questions.
Oh, that was my next question. Is like, what do you think about some of those questions? You know, how do things fall within the categories of propriety and you know, when someone is confronted, like Rebecca was in a parking lot, what is their concern, and how are we interpreting things different, and how are there categories that of things that would be appropriate or not appropriate for women to do and or teach in a church setting, and that would still yet encourage them to pursue more theological training?
Well, I think one of the things that's crystal clear that these ladies that we've mentioned at least make crystal clear is they are not in the office of the pastor. They really believe biblically that the office of pastor, which carries ecclesiastical authority, is reserved for men, and so they support and submit themselves to them. So they're not trying to assume that role. So I think that's one clear divide. And the things that would be associated with the office of the pastor, you know, leading the session or administering the sacraments or getting up on the Sabbath day and preaching the word of God, they're not going to be doing those types of things. But there's so many other things that women, particularly women who are trained theologically, can do and should be doing and should be encouraged to be doing in the life of the church. They can go out and evangelize and visit prisons and minister in hospitals and support ministries and teach in certain places that are appropriate for them to be doing. And so there's so many things that the women of the church need to be doing, and we need to be encouraging them to get equipped so that they can function that way in the life of God's people.
So you were talking about teaching in appropriate places, and I'd be curious, are there some who would find the public sphere, like a blog or a podcast, to be an inappropriate place? And is that where some of these issues are coming up, or why someone like, you know, you mentioned is confronted in a parking lot, and, you know, would a conference be okay? I mean, I don't want to get too nitpicky with this or too, you know, too legalistic about it, but I'm kind of curious just on a larger categorical scale where, you know, what things would be appropriate and what wouldn't.
I don't agree with what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it. in response to that, There are some. There was a, I'm not going to say who, but there was an article published recently online, particularly in response to some of what's been going on in the PCA and the role of women in the PCA. And basically, the article said that whenever it comes to teaching doctrine or the word, women should not be doing that. And I actually corresponded a little bit with the author and said, just so I'm very clear on what you're saying here, it doesn't matter the venue. We're not talking stated worship. You're saying whenever the Bible is being taught or doctrine is being taught, that should not be a woman who is teaching that, but that should be a man. And he said, yes, because whenever doctrine or the word is being taught, there's an exercise of authority. And so Paul's prohibition against women exercising authority over men would apply to any and every sphere where doctrine and the word is being taught. So I think that would be one of the answers to that, Aaron. I'm not saying I agree. I don't actually agree with that. But that would be one way that somebody would respond to that question.
Hmm. Interesting. So the distinction then that we should be clear on is that if it's outside of public stated worship, you know, that's being overseen by a session, that it would be appropriate for women to engage in conversations and teaching about doctrine and scripture. Is that correct?
Well, I'd probably be a little bit more careful than that. I do think the
Let's have a fight.
I do think the worship distinction helps. Another place I think that in terms of working this out in a practical way, so that we're honoring what the scriptures say, I think I'd be a little uncomfortable if a woman was teaching a class on theology to all the men and women, Sunday school class on theology to the men and women of the church. I'd prefer that to be a man, or if a woman is involved, that there would be someone else there, perhaps an elder there, a pastor there, participating in that. I do think we need to, honor the role and make sure that we don't, when we talk about this submission, that we don't, break it off into these little sharp categories. Oh, it's just only in worship, for instance, that we only do this. I think we need to be careful because the office of a pastor goes beyond just what he does on Sunday morning. He carries that office throughout the week. And so you want, as the congregation lives out its life before the Lord, you just want to make sure that without preventing women from having real and true and good ministry in the life of God's people, that we don't begin to then start confusing who really the Lord has put in the congregation to guide and lead it. We really want to be seeing the elders have that position, I believe, in a local congregation.
So Barry, can I ask the question this way? Do you think that a woman can do in the life of the congregation what any other non-elder is permitted to do?
There's all types of that's a hard question to answer. In many ways, yes, but then again, we are men and women. You get some of the gender issues there as well that you'd have to think through. So, for instance, would I want a woman leading a all male high school boy camping trip? No. It just doesn't seem natural. those take wisdom.
I don't think
right?
anybody should be subjected to leading an all male high school camping trip.
I hope no woman or man would want to lead an all high school camping trip. That sounds horrible.
But I this is just where wisdom comes in. It's hard to lay down again law. You'd have to look at these things in a case by case basis. Like, is this appropriate? Are we, I want to protect the women as well as promote them. So I want to put them in places and positions where their gifts are being used. But there may be some times where I would reserve in talking with them and shepherding them. I'd probably want to be careful about putting them in a place where where they might get falsely accused, for instance. So again, you just have to work through some of the parameters of this.
So rather than trying to back you guys into a corner, because I feel like I'm kind of pushing things
to its
limit. I'm going to back up. I'm going to go the other direction, though, not in saying what shouldn't be done, but how do you encourage women to use their gifts in a church? And how can you make sure that godly, thoughtful, intelligent women are able to serve in ways in which they are equipped, and not just say, sorry, you have this particular gift, but you can't use it because you happen to be a woman? How do we encourage women to use their gifts and use them well?
I have a daughter who's in her early 20s and who's not married. And there are times where she feels, because she's left her college environment where she had a lot of young ladies and others around her in this, that were single. A lot of them have been married, and it's difficult for her at times to feel whole or received in her own person by the congregation simply because she's not married, or she's viewed as my daughter rather than a person in her own right. And so I try to encourage her not to let, whether those are real perceptions or just ones that she's imagining, to prevent her from serving. And so I've encouraged her. She's done such things as taking seminary level classes to to just equip herself further and find new ways to serve in the congregation and to go, whether it's with children or she led a discipleship group this past year, just to invest herself in the life of the church. And so I think we need to come alongside. I realize this just all the more as I get older, that it's not only the men who need discipled, the men who need to be encouraged, but we got to come alongside the ladies of the congregation as well and make sure they have the freedom to use their gifts in good and appropriate ways.
We don't need to get into it. I would slightly maybe disagree a little bit with what Barry had previously said about where the role of women are in the church, but I'm probably in a church that would largely agree with Barry on that. And so the avenues that, you know, it starts for me. I have four little women in my house right now. And so it has started with her mother.
There's no little women, Kyle. There's no little women.
I don't know. Borg girls are pretty small.
That's Amy Bird's title of her book. That's why I said that.
I know. So, but it starts with, I guess, as a father, it has started where their mother and I, my wife, just to qualify that, we are raising our daughters with a knowledge of theology and of the scriptures. There's, in that regard, there's no distinction, I guess, in the way that we are training up my son with that knowledge as well as my daughters. And so as a father, it begins in the house for me. Our daughters are being catechized. They are going to be learning the same things that my son largely does. As far as the church goes, you know, one of the things, our congregation doesn't really have classes that are geared towards women and classes that are geared towards men. Everything that we do, we largely do together. We involve mm-hmm. men and women. And part of that is programming, and that's the way it's been done. But part of that, from my perspective, is intentional as well. Because while there are specific issues, right, men need to learn how to be fathers and husbands, and women need to learn how to be mothers and wives, and there's some differences there. But by and large, one of the things that I'd like to convey in that is the primary things that our church is teaching are not really applicable only to men or only to women. That our Sunday school classes and the other classes that we have, these are things that are needed for both men and women in the church. So our teaching ministry would largely take on that diverse character, that we're not going to be teaching one thing to a group of men, like some heady systematic theology, while all the women in the church go through a homemaking book or something like that. That's not what we do. But I also, part of it for me is also just personal relationships. I told you there's this one woman in my church who really enjoys being engaged on that level. And that's, as a pastor and as a friend, that's what I try to do. I know this is an interest of hers. So let's talk about Sinclair Ferguson's newest book on sanctification. Let's talk about the doctrine of sanctification and incorporating her in that as well. And just what Barry said, just encouraging them to continue serving the church. By and large, I think women can do and should be doing what any non-elder in the church is doing. I would not send a woman on a camping trip with all high school boys, just as I would not send a man on a camping trip with all high school girls. So if that's the distinction Barry wants to make, I would agree with that. But I want the people in our church to know that we can all be serving the whole body in very similar ways.
Yes, and I would agree with that. I just didn't want to make too blanket a statement regarding that. I mean, there are gender-specific parts of the Bible, like Titus 2, for instance, where older women teach younger women on the things of home life. But I agree with what Kyle is saying, that all in all the theology that we're teaching in the church, it's for all our people. We catechize everyone. We disciple all of them. And most of the ministry opportunities are available to all. There would be only a few that wouldn't be seen that way, I believe.
Yeah, guys, that's actually really helpful. And I'd never really heard it phrased that way as, is it okay for, you know, a woman to do anything a non-elder would do? And just to have it in that category, that I think that's really helpful, because I know there's circumstances in churches that would not agree with that. And I would certainly agree with that statement. Kyle. And so I would put myself in that camp. It's helpful because I think a lot of times, and this is a lot of the conversation that my wife and I end up having, is it seems that in some cases there are women who have gifts that are not allowed to use them. Now, and I'm not talking about serving the office of elder, but because it's thought that, you know, only men should do a lot of things that extend beyond the office of elder. And so I think that distinction is really helpful. And I think it's a good place for us to kind of tie things up. Guys, any closing thoughts before we peel off for the episode?
Aaron, only one thing I might say is it's somewhat like at times when you're looking at someone, you know, in a different Reformed denomination, it's so easy to focus on the few distinctives that divide you rather than the great amount of truth that you're united under. And I think it's just part of our sinful human condition. And I think it can be much the same in these types of questions. We're sitting here trying to categorize one another and say, you can do this, you can't do that, rather than remembering that both men and women are made in the image of God. There's so much we can do and so much we should be doing together. Yes, 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 we believe that they are made male and female, and there are certainly things that come along with that. But by and large, as Paul said in Galatians, before Christ, you know, there's not male or female. We're to be one in Christ, and we should really be trying to emphasize that in the life of a congregation.
And just to close with re-emphasizing that quote that I gave of John Piper from the beginning, I think he's right. What the church needs desperately today are true matriarchs of the faith. And to be a matriarch of the faith is to have, it's not only that, but it is to have a theological backbone of steel. And that's what I want. I want people, men and women in the church, that can reflect that to my children and edify me as well with that. And so that's an encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, guys. This has been another episode of 3GT. You can find more about us at 3GT.fm, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We'll see you next time.